Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you.
It's great to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours.
Yeah. Sherry, we've been having...
Both of us sounding a little nasally, but aside from that...
Absolutely.
Functional voices.
Yes, that's great. And I'll try to keep my coughing to a minimum here.
Very good. I'll try not to sneeze through the entire hour.
We'll see how far we get.
That's right.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. As many of you know, archives of today's show and all of our previous shows are available at sherryhuber.com. That's Sherry's website, and it's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. If you want to join our conversation today, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. Or you can drop us an email, if you choose, at openair@kzsu.org. Sherry, I was curious if there was any particular topic you wanted to start out with today?
No, none that I can think of. I'd be interested in talking about whatever anybody else has going on. I just got back from Naropa University in Boulder.
Yes.
And we spent the weekend there talking about anxiety, fear, and depression. And how to go beyond that mentally, spiritually, emotionally, as well as physically. So that's very up in my conscious awareness right now. But anything is good with me.
That sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good weekend there in Boulder.
It was an excellent weekend. Naropa is for people who haven't had the pleasure. You might give yourself that the gift of going there for an event. They have an amazing series of programs, workshops, that sort of thing that they put on with, from all sorts of traditions and persuasions, and so it was great. We had people from all over the country, and it was just a lot of fun. I always like to remind people that just because somebody is drawn to a workshop primarily focused on depression, it doesn't mean they're not fun.
Yes,
because we had a very, very good time.
Great.
Yeah.
And perhaps people will join us from all over the country today as well.
Mm-hmm. And talk about what's going on in their part of the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sherry, I have a written question here that I'd like to share with you.
Okay.
Is what happens to me a mirror of what is inside? Perhaps something as yet uninvestigated inside. Not just as projection, but drawing some event to me that mirrors some internal belief.
Well, that is truly a chicken and an egg sort of question.
Isn't it? Yes.
And I know it's a very popular view of life and how life works that we draw things to us that are unfinished in us, or unfinished. Ram Dass calls them uncooked seeds. And so we energetically draw people and circumstances and events to us in order to work on those things. You know, I can understand how people would get there because it's plausible. I mean, if a person looked at life from that perspective, certainly life would confirm that belief.
Yes.
But as with every belief, it leaves me in that place of, I don't know that. And so I would rather go for something that, as an explanation, that I do have an experience of, and that is projection.
Yes.
Because we know that a particular person, circumstance, event can come into our lives. At one time, we have one response to it, or reaction to it, another time, another. The same kind of thing can happen in a variety of lives, and the reactions to whatever that specific... oh my gosh, I got out there and I don't know whether is or are is the verb tense that I want to go with, whether our reactions are a result of the circumstances or our interpretation.
Uh-huh.
So to me, the more helpful of the two approaches is whatever is going on, I get a chance to see when I watch what I make it mean, I get a chance to see my karmic conditioning in action.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm going to interpret it through my karmic conditioning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then that gives me somewhere to work. You know, I could, if I believe that I have drawn this miserable life circumstance to me so that I can deal with it or see more about it. It can put a lot of focus in how am I doing. So if I'm handling this well, and what does that mean?
Yes.
Or if I'm handling it poorly, then it says something about me, and I get derailed into a focus on, am I meeting my standards for how I should respond, rather than,
uh-huh.
You know, what am I making this mean? What am I believing about what this is? And for me, the process of it, the opportunity that we have to see ourselves at such a deep level, see ourselves reflected at such a deep level, seems more helpful to me than another exercise in, am I meeting ego standards or not?
Uh-huh. Sherry, tell me if I heard you correctly. There's a sense of looking at this situation from a place of, I don't know, rather than in the context of some belief and sort of confirming or disconfirming that belief.
Yeah, and the next layer for me of that would be confirming or not my karmically conditioned beliefs about how I am and how I should be.
Uh-huh.
So it takes it, you know, if I go into the store and the clerk is really rude and I don't get what I want, and I throw a temper tantrum and start screaming and cussing, or if I channel the Buddha and I'm just, everything that happens I approach with equanimity and serenity.
Uh-huh.
Most of us are conditioned to have an opinion about who we are and how we are based on our reaction.
Uh-huh.
So rather than, that reaction is really interesting, I wonder where that's coming from. What has inspired that reaction? Now, that's, to me, that feels very, very open-ended.
Uh-huh.
But one more opportunity for me to fail the test of being the person I should be, or one more opportunity to pass the test.
Yes.
Seems to me not helpful.
Yes.
Because on that, you did well, you did poorly. You know, that for many, many folks, that's going on practically every moment of life. Am I feeling the right feelings? Did I say the right thing? Do I have the right look on my face? Is what I'm wearing appropriate?
Yes.
Am I as far along as I should be? Is my relationship as good as other people's relationship? You know, it's just this, that thing that we kid about endlessly, you know, let's bring all of life back to me.
Yes.
There's all of life, and what does it say about me?
Yes.
Rather than a chance to go to a more, I would say, universal place of, well now, where does that kind of response come from in a human being?
Uh-huh.
Much, much bigger.
Absolutely.
So I might say, I got really upset and started yelling at this clerk, and so what do I know about myself? Well, I often do that when I'm tense and pressured and feel stressful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I wasn't feeling tense, pressured, and stressful. So what else is it? And as I look, I might have an intuition that, you know, this guy talked to me exactly the way my older brother talked to me. Well, that's interesting. And then I might have some little flashbacks of all of the times that people like that evoked that kind of reaction in me. Then I might say, who is that in me? Who is that part of me? And I might see a younger sister who felt inferior or was too young to defend herself or felt taken advantage of. You know, so we're just hop-skipping along through awarenesses rather than, it's true. I'm a miserable... poor excuse for an awareness student.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. Sherry, the phones are ringing here.
Good.
Great. I'd like to welcome Pat from Boulder, Colorado. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Pat.
Good evening.
How are you doing?
Great.
Sherry, hi.
Hi.
This is so exciting.
Great.
We're talking again.
We are talking again, and you can hear me?
Yes.
Good. I'm on my cell phone, and it has an echo.
Yes, we're getting a little bit of your echo, but so far, so good.
Yes.
Okay. So Are we ready for my question?
Let's go for it.
I'm going to try and articulate this as best I can. It's a big question for me, and it's one that I think you've addressed fairly well. It's about this different approach that you do so well. It's one of allowing. It's one of having compassionate awareness for all that might arise, including, of course, the big topic of conditioning.
Yes.
To not try and beat it to death, conquer it, make it go away, but to really see it simply for what it is and to allow it to exist also.
Yeah, so we are conditioned as human beings. From the time we're little children, we are told and taught what is right, what's good, what's bad, what's ugly, what we should be striving for, what it means about us if we are this kind of person or that kind of person. We are deeply conditioned in the same way that we are taught to speak a language, we are taught how to relate to our family members, and it's a huge amount of conditioning that we receive in order to know those things. We get that kind of conditioning about everything in life.
Right.
And part of surviving that childhood socialization process is getting good at it. And what we do is internalize the messages, the judgments that those conditioning us have so that we can do to ourselves before they do to us.
Right.
So I eventually internalize, say, my mother's and my father's voices, and I learn to hold the same opinions they had and punish myself in the same ways that I was punished by them, and usually, in fact, for most of us, a little a stronger version of that.
Sure.
Yeah, and then I see it. I see that that's what's going on, and, of course, I want to apply all the same principles to this new awareness because it makes me the wrong person. I shouldn't be conditioned. I shouldn't have these reactions. I should have gone beyond that. I should be more aware than that. And what you're suggesting is the approach of simply recognizing I was conditioned, of course it's still there, and simply allowing it, accepting it as it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here's really kind of the thrust of my question, because in my experience, I haven't found that necessarily makes it go away. You have a different relationship with
exactly.
It kind of reminds me of that movie, A Beautiful Mind. I thought it was such a beautiful portrayal of this guy who had these demons that
yes.
we could call conditioned demons. And he struggled with them. And he didn't quite understand what was going on with them. But by the end of the movie, he could wave at them. He could smile at them.
Yes.
He had a whole different relationship.
Yes. And your point about that is really essential for us. He didn't indulge them. He didn't befriend them. He didn't go off with them.
No.
He simply noticed them, acknowledged that they were there, and went on about his life.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's where we are with everything in our lives. Okay? For instance, the phone that you're on, or something about the station or the connection we have or whatever, makes it sound like, at least in my ears, sounds like there's a foghorn behind you kind of that has kind of run amok. And so as we're talking, I could either focus on that and get distressed or upset or feel like there's something wrong and I need to fix it, I need to do something about that, or I could just notice that it's there. Acknowledge that it's there. Yes, it is there. I don't need to pretend that it's not or try to deny it.
Right.
But I don't need to pay attention to it. I don't need to give it any, as we say in California, any energy. I can just allow it to be there, and then you and I can have our conversation.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. So Just to take this a little further, because I think surprised when I read in your book, and I may be confusing a little bit you with Anthony DeMello, because he also suffered from depression.
Well, that's great. You can confuse me with him anytime you like. That's very flattering.
And I was a little taken aback, and you know, to the subject of projection. You know, people have projections. I have projections about teachers that, of course, they don't. They've transcended these things. They don't have a lot of problems that the normal folks do.
Right. Well, and the, you know, Pat, the thing about that for me is, it doesn't matter whether they do currently. It's really important that they have.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's huge.
That is huge.
I meet a lot of people who talk about awareness practice as something that they've started in the last year.
Uh-huh.
Now, am I in the same place that they are? Mentally, emotionally, spiritually? Are we looking at the same things, confused about the same things, struggling with the same things? Of course not. Of course not. But that doesn't mean that I don't know those places.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, Sherry, my connection here is not pretty bad.
Yes, it's going downhill. Even with an attitude of mind of acceptance, we can acknowledge that it's not getting better.
So I'm going to get off the line and let somebody else get on with hopefully a better connection.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Pat.
I'd gotten kind of fond of that foghorn.
Yes.
Didn't it have kind of a nautical feel to it?
Yes.
Fog is rolling in and...
Yes. I was trying to figure some correlation with his talking or something else, but I couldn't find it.
Uh-huh.
So, Sherry, what Pat was talking about reminds me of what we talk about all the time, is allowing whatever's there to be there.
Yes.
And I heard a sense from Pat, or expectation perhaps, that once we accept those voices and allow them, we do so with the expectation that they're going to go away.
And, of course, as we know, doing it with that expectation is going to lead to nothing but disappointment. Yeah. It's so difficult to really get that in the face of the amount of conditioning that we have. That one day you will be perfect. And when you are, then that's it. So if it's awareness practice or spiritual practice, then all the lights will come on and they will just stay on. And then you'll just bliss your way through the rest of your life, never being troubled by anything that you don't want, having everything the way you want it to be. What a fantasy for ego.
Yes.
Yeah, and then, of course, you get beaten up if that's not happening. Well, how long have you been doing this? My gosh, I mean, you've been doing this for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever it is,
yes.
And you're still a human being?
Yes.
Well, then this is all the proof we need that there's something really wrong with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, rather than what we're here to do is accept what is, not get the version of what is that ego says we need to have in order to be the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we say it over and over and over. We all know it. There's nobody listening who doesn't know that. We all know that's the right answer.
Yes.
In the moment when something arises that everything in your conditioning says no.
Yes.
To say, oh, right, now everything in my conditioning is screaming no, and my job is to accept all of it, including the conditioning that's screaming no,
yes.
Exactly as it is. And with that, we're free. It doesn't matter what ego is screaming no about. The acceptance is freedom.
Wow.
And so if I'm that way for the rest of my natural life, what difference does it make? As long as the acceptance is there. Now, I can hear people saying, so... Are you saying that you should be free to act out in any way you want to, and as long as you accept it, it's perfectly fine? No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all.
Yes.
Although, it's true. Yeah, and that's people will get hung up. So then we get the, well, what about Hitler? So you're saying what Hitler did was fine. I'm not even talking about that. That's confusing, as I'm fond of saying, oranges and baseball bats.
Yes.
Yeah, so accepting what is, the freedom is in accepting, yes, this is so. Yes, this is what's going on. Yes, it is. Now, in that acceptance, I also have some choices. So if I'm being cruel to somebody, I can accept that that's going on, because what is my choice? To deny it? To pretend that it's not happening? To stop and then pretend that what happened before didn't happen? No, I'm being cruel to somebody. I'm being insensitive to them. I become aware of that. I can stop. I can stop right there. And it doesn't, the fact that I stopped doesn't mean I didn't do it. And the fact that I did it doesn't mean I'm a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
Just means I'm somebody who, for that period of time, was in a level of ignorance, delusion, hatred that resulted in that behavior. We're all there some of the time. And working on this compassionate, conscious awareness and acceptance is the fastest way out of it. And that's all it means.
Yes.
It doesn't even mean that. That's all it is.
Yes. Sherry, as you were talking, it reminded me of the title of one of your books, which is Trying to Be Human.
Yes.
And it's so crazy because, you know, why do we need to try to be human? Because we are human.
That's right. So what is all this effort? Well, the right. effort is to try to be a different human than the one that we are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, for the record, of course, the person who put that together and actually came up with that title is Sarah Jenkins.
Yes.
And a fabulous body of work she has assembled. And her latest one, which I really enjoy, came out last year, I guess, This Side of Nirvana.
Yes.
So just a little plug for Sarah's work.
Absolutely.
She does a good job.
Yes.
She does an excellent job of making awareness practice really comprehensible to people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's my experience as well. Sherry, the phones are still ringing here. Let me give out the phone number one more time, 650-723-9010, if you'd like to join our conversation. And I'd like to welcome Rebecca from New Hampshire. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening.
Good evening. My question involves stress, like you were talking about earlier mm-hmm. when you were in at the Naropa Institute. I have an awareness practice. However, I'm in school, and when I'm bombarded with all these things that I have to do, I find it very hard to come back to center, to find my way back.
Yes, which, not to derail you from the rest of your thought, but is the reason, I would suggest, most things in life are set up the way they're set up.
So that we can't come back to center?
Yep. Because there are things that are so important and so real and so true and mm-hmm. just essential. We cannot risk being successful in those to come back to center. You know, later, when you're out of school, when you're in your career, when your life is really working the way, then you can indulge this desire to be aware. But right now, life is too real and important to mess around with awareness.
That makes sense. It feels like it's set up in such a way that it's impossible unless I change something.
Yeah.
Take some things away.
Right. And it's really interesting because I'm sure this is your experience. What you're doing is a lot and probably pretty much maxes you out. Mm-hmm. And then there is the added burden of all of the voices telling you how difficult this is and how overwhelming and how busy you are and how you're not going to get it done. Do you have those?
Oh, intensely.
Yeah. And those, of course, then just topple the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, and I know that what I say about this just seems like madness to people, because going to school is really important. You don't want to flunk out of school. You don't. Although, let me tell you, it's not the end of the world. But, because, you know, there's almost, as long as there's breath, it's possible to redo just darn near anything. So, but people will say, well, yeah, but I've got to, you know, I've got to do this because the stakes are so high. If you can approach this, that no matter how high the stakes are, you are not going to go through this getting an education process in a way that is detrimental to you. So you'll do whatever it takes not to be stressful. Okay? So instead of the focus is on my grades and papers and getting through this and completing that, the focus is on not being stressful.
I like that focus.
Oh, and I'm telling you, I promise you, if you can learn to be in life without stress, you will be so much more effective, efficient, productive than you can even imagine. I was kidding people this weekend at Naropa, and I can't remember what the person was talking about, but it's something like this. And what I said, they said, well, how do you find time to do all of this? And I said, don't agonize. Just take all of the time you spend, all the time and energy you spend agonizing, and take that and devote it to what you're trying to accomplish. You have just accelerated yourself exponentially. Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, and it sounds like you're also having a really nice time doing it.
A really nice time doing it, because the thing that everybody in the world, I bet, this is big projection, but I bet it's true, everybody wants somebody who is an unconditionally loving, supportive, accepting cheerleader slash servant. Okay? So to have somebody whose only concern in life is your well-being, have that person watching out for you and making decisions and helping you make decisions for your life, can you imagine how great that would be?
Yeah.
Think of what you could do, of what you could accomplish if you had that kind of support. And that kind of support is just as close as your current breath.
Well, I have a second part to my question.
Okay.
I did a retreat with you. It was called Facing Fear.
Uh-huh.
You have that book, too. And during that retreat, you talked about some things that can assist getting back to center, in addition to meditation and breath.
Uh-huh.
Things like take movement.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could expand on that list for me, so I can add to my bag of tools.
Okay. Well, of course, I think it is critical that people have periods of time every day to be alone. And if you can combine that with some kind of movement, like if you can walk in the woods or in a park, or now you can walk around the block, but it doesn't actually provide the same thing for the system that walking in the woods does. Most people, now there are some people, of course, who are afraid to be in the woods, and so if you're one of those, it's not gonna be helpful. But if you're not, then there's something about being in nature that takes a lot of folks to a place of immediate and automatic acceptance. It's really beautiful. You know those trees and bushes are not judging you. And you walk around the neighborhood, and there are just too many reminders for conditioning to grab onto. So when you're walking in the woods, the thing the conditioned mind is trying to do is get you not to be present to walking in the woods. So it wants you to solve problems or replay old conversations or, you know, make yourself miserable over how much there is to do. Because if you're just there, present to the beauty of nature and the movement of your body, the odds are very good that you're going to drop that conditioned response for at least a little while. You're going to come back to yourself, back to your authentic nature, out of the world of egocentric karmic conditioning. You're going to be here, present in this moment, and that really messes with that conditioning. So solitude, silence, movement, in the not just, you don't have to run. Walking is good. I would say setting up a program for yourself where you journal at the same time every day so that you check in, keep track of what goes on with you. Now, and I said at the same time every day because that is really, really, really important. If you just journal as a way of getting in touch with yourself, then what usually happens is that the same aspect of the personality, the journaler, always journals, and then you just get one person's view of life. Yep. Rather than at 4 o'clock every day, I'm going to journal, and who knows where I'll be and what part of me will be there and what she will have to say and how she'll see the world and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So those would be good.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Let us know.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Coming up at 6 p.m., we have some great world music with DJ Decca. The show is at the Cafe Bohemian. And then at 8 p.m., we have CW. Sherry and our listeners, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. If you'd like to join our conversation today, please give us a call at 650-723-9010. Sherry, I was listening to your conversation with Rebecca, and it occurred to me that how do we get to this place where this particular thing is so important that I can't be present?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we talk about, as you very well know, some of the signs of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes.
Urgency.
Yes.
Something wrong.
Yes.
Loss, lack, deprivation, fear.
Yes.
Those kinds of things. So when we start paying attention, we can notice that our conditioned mind wants to keep us in those states pretty much all the time.
Yes.
If we look at our culture, we notice that noise is just where it's at. We cannot be anywhere that there isn't a great deal of noise going on, usually in the form of music. It's not even any longer background. You know,
yes.
I think people, maybe when it started off, it was background music, but now it is foreground music. And so conversation is held over the top of this this music that's going constantly, television sets that are going constantly. People feel guilty if they're not reading the newspaper and listening to the radio and keeping up with the news and this sort of thing. So all of this focus on these kinds of activities keeps us in that urgent, something wrong, loss, lack, deprivation, fear, kind of, well, something wrong mind.
Yes.
And so we're just there. We're just locked in that place of, I can't pay attention. I can't be here. I can't enjoy my life. I can't feel grateful. I mean, I am. I am grateful, but... You know, this is really important, and I've got to do this, and this is coming up, and I need to focus. Yeah, and we look at everybody's looking at that in this culture, because then your life is over, and so you've got this giant to-do list with little check marks by it, but you never were who you want to be, and you never felt the way you wanted to feel, and you never got to do the things that you wanted to do, and there we are.
Absolutely.
So it's really going up against, you know, this latest book, When You're Falling Dive, I'm so passionate about because it's my best attempt at addressing this very topic, that we have to go up against that conditioning at the deepest level. For most of us, it's a sensation level where that all of that is locked in the body and held in place, and we've got to confront it. So, you know, you've got to do. Well, no, you've got to sit still until those voices are no longer dominating your life experience. You know, you've got to accomplish. No, you need to do nothing until that urgency can come up and the anxiety and do its worst, and you just recognize it as a series of sensations in your body. They don't mean anything about who you are or how you should be or what you have to do. And that's really what we're doing in an awareness practice, is going up against that kind of pressure in our system in order to be able to have the life experience that we want.
Yes.
Yeah, that we choose, that our hearts choose.
Yes.
So it's not just going to my ego for what kind of life do I want, but at the deepest level, what is it? So one of the ways I talk to people about this is, okay, you are the person that you should be. You've accomplished everything that you're supposed to accomplish. When that happens, you will get something from that. And what that something is a certain feeling.
Yes.
Then I'll be the right person. Then I'll deserve to be happy. Then I'll enjoy my life. And so it's recognizing that in ourselves, that that's what's motivating us, or that's what we're being told is motivating us. So to go directly after that, have that, and then let all of this other stuff fall into place behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So as Rebecca was talking, you know, she's going to school. She's in school. Now, I would project that somebody who's in school is there. The secondary motivation is a desire for an education. Okay? It's that'll open doors. It'll make it easy for her to accomplish things.
Yes.
She'll be the person that she should be, and then life will work for her, and she'll be happy and have what she wants.
Yes.
Okay, so first have that.
Yes.
First be the person that you want to be, have the things that you want, and that's that feeling again. Okay, I'll feel like a good person, and that I deserve good things in life. Okay, have that, get there. And then do whatever you want to do. Then go to school, have a career, get married, have children, you know, whatever the list is.
Yes.
We have it just backwards. It's I have to do all of those things. I have to get my education and have a good career and make a lot of money and find the right person and buy a home and have children. And then I'll get to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Backwards.
So be happy. Get some
first
clarity.
Be happy. Yep.
Learn
how to be happy.
Yes. And then from that happiness, there's a clarity there about what do I want to do.
Exactly.
And it's not
because you're not going to be doing things because they're going to make you happy.
Absolutely.
So you're going to be doing them from a whole different place, completely different motivation. Okay, now I'm already happy. Now what do I want to do?
Yes. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good deal.
It is. It's a very good deal. And, of course, my encouragement is to do it immediately.
Yes.
You know, we could say, do it while you're young. But in case you're no longer young, it's important to keep in mind you're as young as you're ever going to be.
Yes.
So now would be a good time to do that.
Now.
Yeah, put everything on hold and find out how you cause yourself to suffer. Find out how you can be happy. Do that and then make whatever choices you want to make in life.
Good. Mm-hmm. Sherry, the phones are still ringing here.
Excellent.
We have two callers on hold.
Good.
I'd like to welcome Bill from San Mateo. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening.
It's very good to talk with you.
Thank you.
I really enjoy your show a lot, and I've been listening to it for a while now. And I just want pretty much called to just tell you that.
Wonderful. Now, this will sound like complaining or something. It's not, but we get a surprisingly small amount of that kind of feedback.
And, now, you know, I noticed that, and that's why...
We don't get any feedback, actually, so we can only hope you guys are out there and that you're listening. So
I think people tend to think that you don't need it.
Yes. It's one of those completion things, right?
Right.
Yeah, when you're an evolved, awakened master... Why would you need that? And if you do need it, well, then there's the evidence we've been looking for that you're not.
Well, I brag about you all the time, actually. When I'm in conversations with my friends and stuff, I go, oh, there's this lady, Sherry Huber, she's really cool, and she has these ways of thinking about how our brain works, and it's really cool. So, yeah, thanks.
Good. Well, I appreciate that.
I have one question about what you said about the journaling thing.
Yes.
Oh, I got a little confused. Were you saying it's good to do it at a certain time every day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that way you have your best chance at getting different parts of you to journal. So it's with anything that we do like that, If we get a chance to see something different when we take the habit element out of it.
Right.
Yeah. So if you want to work on your romance, then it would be good to work on that at all different times of the day, when you're being all different kinds of people, mm-hmm. instead of leaving one person in charge of romance, and he only has X amount of time at the end of the day when everybody else has their needs met.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I think I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's that same kind of principle. You know, every day at 5 o'clock or every day at 9 a.m., I'm just going to pick up the pen and I'm going to journal for a while. I'm going to get a chance to see such a wide range of personalities and points of view and interests and moods and emotions and all of that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, of course, it'll be easy because the journaler will come in and say, oh, well, I journal, I'll do it. But other times, you know, we'll realize, oh, there's this part that just comes up and says, I don't want to talk about, oh, okay, well, huh, you're an interesting person to get to know.
This got it, yeah.
I want to talk, yeah.
Wow, yeah, I think I stopped myself from letting all those different people talk a lot of times.
Yes, yeah, because we're usually identified with a part of us who is in charge.
Right.
That part gets to decide, you get to talk, no, you don't get to talk, no, I don't like what you think. What you're saying, I don't want that point of view expressed. So,
yep.
Yeah, finding out who's the person at the controls is really important.
Wow, interesting. Cool. Well, speaking of that, I just pulled up to my house, so I'm going to go in and...
All right.
Do what I need to do.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right, thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bill. Sherry, I appreciated that question and the way you approached it, in the sense that if you approach journaling or romance at the same time every day, we don't know which aspect of our personality is going to be there, and it's a chance to check in with that.
Yes, yeah. And I hear myself say this periodically, that we have aspects of the personality. You know, folks who live inside of us with enough interests and moods and skills and that sort of thing, that we can be appropriate to any life situation.
Mm-hmm.
But we almost always have that controller person who is saying, you go do it, you go do it, you do that, you take care of that. And that controller person is not on our side.
Uh-huh.
So that controller person is constantly giving jobs to people who shouldn't have them.
Yes.
So, yes. You know, when you're going to go visit your family and you have difficulty perhaps relating to your parents, you know, you don't want the surly teenager to go, or the frightened child.
Yes.
You know, you want a grown-up, you want an adult to go,
yes.
Somebody with at least a chance of being centered.
Yes.
Now, when you're off playing with your friends, then you would like a younger aspect of you to go. Somebody who likes to play and have fun. You
yes.
don't want the person there who's worried about paying the bills.
Yes.
But if we look at our lives, at how often we are inappropriate, and I don't mean that judgmentally, I just
yes.
mean it's not the appropriate response, it's not in keeping with what's going on, then there's usually we can find the person there who is diverting our attention to something other than being where we are and letting the aspect of us who would fit well and love those circumstances not letting that person be there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Oh, we're having a great show today. I'm really enjoying it.
Good.
And we have another caller.
If we don't enjoy it, Michael, then we really do need to hang it up if we stop having fun.
Yes. Or at least the two of us are having fun.
That's right. That's
and it
right.
sounds like some other people
and
are.
And some other, at least Bill.
At least
Bill's
Bill.
Bill's with us.
That makes three.
Yep.
I'd like to welcome Celia from Seattle. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Sherry.
Good evening.
It's great to be talking with you.
Thank you.
I would like to talk about this business of the sense of urgency and something's wrong and...
loss, lack, deprivation.
Yeah,
those
all those things.
Fear.
Particularly particularly the urgency
mm-hmm.
is something I'm feeling a lot.
Uh-huh.
And the funny thing is that I'm feeling this, and sort of the wonderful thing for me is that I'm feeling this around a situation that really, if you look at it one way, there can't be any urgency in it. I'm an artist, and I'm having a show, and I'm painting, and it really doesn't, I'm not looking to the show to make money or to do anything specific. It's just a wonderful thing I want to do. And I can see all these urgency feelings sort of swimming in and out in a situation that doesn't call for them.
Yeah. Isn't that helpful?
It's crazy.
Yeah. Crazy helpful, though.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're rarely in a position to see that these reactions that are so real, that are meant to be believed so deeply, are actually not in keeping with what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's extremely illuminating to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, a lot of people would say, are you crazy? You're having this show. You're an artist. You're having a show. Of course you need to be anxious. Of course urgency. You know, there's so...
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But what you're able to see is, no, actually, I'm just doing this because I want to do this, because it's fun. Right? And then
yeah.
urgency is there, and it's like, wait a minute, now that's crazy. How does that work?
Yep. Yeah.
Very, very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Well, anytime we have a conditioned reaction to something, and we're present enough to see this doesn't make sense, it just frees us in a really powerful way from the grip that conditioning has on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, you're in a situation and you're there, and that's key, right? That's the most important thing that we're talking about. You're there. You're present. You're watching it. You're listening, and you hear a voice in your head say something that is really silly, foolish, stupid, doesn't fit, is completely inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes us then to question at a deeper level everything that our conditioning is telling us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting when I'm actually painting. There are these, you know, you talk about how a conditioned mind will say, you've got to do this, and then you do it, and then the conditioned mind will come back and say, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Now you've...
Yeah.
And...
Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Right. And because you told me to.
And I can see this happening in the paint.
Yeah.
It's like one painting will become established, and then this huge bully comes in and just shoves that painting out of the picture, literally, and brings in something else.
Uh-huh.
Woo!
I imagine that you are a pretty thorough student of paintings and painters, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so the one thing that you know from your own experience and from reading about other people is that people who paint masterpieces are not standing there in front of the painting going, oh, God, this has to be good. Oh, God, this has to be good. Oh, God, this has to be good.
But you know what I do believe? One of my beliefs is...
What's that?
That artists suffer to create. Oh, they agonize.
Oh, they do agonize. But when something is brilliant, it's not a product of the agonizing.
Mm.
Okay? So when you read about somebody talking about their process of creating something,
mm-hmm.
here's what they say almost to a person every time. It feels like I'm not even there. It's like I'm a conduit. I'm mm-hmm. just a channel
right.
that this creativity is coming through. True?
Right.
Yeah. So the agonizing is getting to that place.
Right.
Of letting go. And it's not even a letting go. Because most people don't have any idea how they get into that place.
Well, I don't either.
Yeah. 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 they don't. And so the agonizing is it going to work? Will it work? Will it? But the thing you can know is, if you're standing there agonizing over whether or not this is going to be a good painting, it's not going to be. Because what's in that painting is the agonizing.
Right.
And nobody is interested in the personal, egocentric agonizing of another human being. Now, what people are interested in is transcendence. And everything that is brilliant, everything that is genius, comes from that transcendent place. It doesn't come from a place of me, of my ego.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your experience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So whether we're painting or whether we're just regular old human beings walking around living life, the struggle is the same. The ego is saying, I've got to be perfect, I've got to be perfect, this has got to work, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? That's the very thing that's keeping us from having the life experience that we want to have. In those moments of grace or however we want to think about that, the ego is gone, the brilliance comes through, life in its essence is there, it's brilliant, ego comes in and says, I did that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and I've got to do it again.
And I've got to do it again. And now you want to talk about writer's block or painter's block or whatever it is. Because, of course, you didn't do it the first time, so you can't do it again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that this is true. I don't know if it's your experience, but the people who are the great artists and have produced a lot of great things will talk about, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. It doesn't matter what anybody thinks. I just have to do it.
Right.
Yeah. I paint because I have to paint, not because anybody's going to like it. I have to. If I don't paint, I'll lose my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know that place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, again, ego comes in and says, well, yes, but. Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's helpful, isn't it? To be doing a show because you want to do a show, because it's fun, because you like doing it, because you're passionate about this, and then you watch that same process come in as if your well-being were hanging in the balance. And you know it's not.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, doing this, I'm also starting to do a bunch of other things that I really have wanted to do. And I don't even feel like I'm working on the show anymore.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's like now I want to start being outside more and doing some more athletics, and I want to do some more things at the monastery, and I want to go to the movies a lot.
Now, this isn't sabotage we're talking about.
I don't think so.
Okay. Good, because oftentimes that's a real technique that ego uses. So something is really, really important, and then you get to a place of letting go or whatever is going on, and then the next thing that comes in is sabotage. Okay, well then the date of the show will come, and you won't have anything to put in the show because you've been gardening and going to movies and all of these other things. Then ego can come back in and say, "Do you see? Do you see what happens to you if I'm not on you all the time? You don't produce. It doesn't happen. You don't. There's something wrong with you. You're not. You have no follow through. You're not really committed. You're not that serious about this."
Right.
Can you hear it all?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe there is some of that, but it's all getting done.
Yeah. Well, and of course for me, the important piece of that is the awareness element, so that when this show starts, you will have been paying attention all the way through, and whatever conditioning comes up with at that point, it will appear to you in a context, because you know what the voices have been saying all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, even if I do sabotage myself,
it'd be so illuminating.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about with the earlier caller. If we can do the things that we do for the purpose of seeing how we cause ourselves to suffer so that we can free ourselves of that, that it really doesn't matter how things turn out. Because once we see through how we cause ourselves to suffer, once we drop that, then we're freed up to do whatever we want to do, and we can do it joyfully.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if it completely sabotaged the show, and you watched it do that,
uh-huh.
so that you would never fall for those voices again,
uh-huh.
you are light years ahead, because there will be other shows.
Right, and it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the quality of your relationship with yourself. That's the only thing that matters.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Celia. Sherry, we are at the end of our hour.
I know. These are some fascinating folks, huh?
Yeah, it was great.
I started talking to them and time just flies.
Time just flies.
Yeah.
It was a great show.
Yeah.
Do you want to
let's do it again next week.
Let's do it again next week at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
Do you want to take 15 seconds and tell people what we're doing this Saturday?
Yeah. Well, how about if you do that?
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Right.
This Saturday, October 25th, starting at 9 a.m., we're going to be walking across the Golden Gate Bridge in beautiful San Francisco to benefit the Zimbabwe Vulnerable Children's Project, which the Zen Center and Living Compassion have been involved with, and there's more information at livingcompassion.org.
And somebody just said to me yesterday, I think it was, I just found out about this a couple of days ago, and now it's too late for me to get anybody involved. And I said, no, it is not. You just get on the phone, call your loved ones, say, this is what I'm going to do. How much can I sign you up for to sponsor me to make this arduous 3-mile hike back and forth across the Golden Gate Bridge? You know, get your friends and relations to send in some money to support you in supporting this project. And if it's at all possible, come and join us. Represent your clan. And get your T-shirt and have your bagels and your lunch and a good time and learn more about how this project is already helping kids very desperate situations in Zimbabwe and about all of the things that we have coming up on the horizon.
Wonderful.
Yeah, good. I'll see you there.
Let me say a couple quick thank yous to Jay and Lori. We had some great help technically today. I think the audio was really wonderful.
Yes.
I'd like to thank all of our callers and listeners for joining us today. Archives of the shows are available at sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. If you want to contact us before next Tuesday, send us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
See you next week.
Time.